In our practice, in a day like today, a day of meditation, we are training the mind, training the heart in this process of coming closer to the heart, moving closer to the heart. That may seem like a somewhat abstract concept. What is coming closer to the heart? What's coming closer to the heart, what's inclining more and more to the heart is our consciousness. So our consciousness starts off untrained. Consciousness is not a fixed part of who we are. It's a part of the mind that focuses on different objects. Oftentimes our consciousness is focusing and going to different thoughts and different emotions and so on and so forth, maybe other sense experiences. In meditation practice, we're training the mind, we're training our consciousness to focus in places, to go to places that are good for it, that are good for us. So our consciousness is being trained in the meditation to come to the body, so out of the thought fabrications, the stories, the narratives, etc., that it typically goes into, to come into the body. This is concentration, to come to the breath, to come to the body. The more concentration is developed, the more consciousness is trained to come into the body, the more consciousness converges at the heart. So part of this process of training our consciousness to come to the body is the intent that's informed with love and with compassion. So with love and with compassion, out of love, out of compassion, we're training the mind to come to the body. The more we come to the body, the more our consciousness in that effort that's informed by love and compassion inclines right to the heart. So in higher states of concentration, consciousness converges right at the heart. So your awareness is right at the heart. So we're training our mind so that our awareness is right at the heart. The more we practice meditation, the more that we train the mind to be with the breath and in the body in all postures, the more our awareness, our consciousness is in the body and at the heart. So even as we go through our days, of course, we're making an effort to come to the breath, to come to the body. We're more in the heart. But as we go through our days, because of that effort that we're making, more and more our awareness is right at the heart, is right at the heart. So we're striving to be closer and closer to the heart. This is the goal of the practice, to come to the heart. And then to live from the heart, to take action from the heart, action informed by compassion and loving kindness, you know, which includes, of course, discerning what action is informed by compassion and loving kindness and then taking that action. So it may be big actions in our lives in terms of our work and our career and our relationships. It may be more subtle actions like coming to a retreat or just the subtle actions that we take from day to day and moment to moment. The more we have concentration, the more our awareness is in the body and converges at the heart, the more we understand, the more we're able to understand what's going to be action that we can take that's informed by our wish to be free from suffering, our wish to be happy, and the more we're able to take that action. So there's the actions that we take in our lives in terms of the things that we do, and the way that we are in relationships. There's our thought action, and then there's the transcendent action of letting go. The transcendent action of letting go. The more and more we have awareness in the body and into the heart, the more able we are to let go. So if we really want to let go, our job is to train our awareness to be in the body, using the breath as a center in the body. If you do that, you'll be more at the heart and you'll be able to let go and you'll be able to take action in your life that's informed by love. So we do concentration. The concentration brings us to the heart. Brings us to the heart. The heart's already there, but we have to get there, and the concentration brings us to the heart. So when the Buddha awakened, he had three great insights, sometimes called the three knowledges. The first knowledge that he had was that our happiness is determined by our actions. It's determined by what we do in this life. The second great knowledge that he came to was that if our actions are informed by the heart, if they're informed by love and compassion, this will lead us to happiness in this life. And then the third great knowledge he came to was his understanding that we had to see how the heart was blocked. We had to see how the heart was blocked. So we make an effort to come to the body and come to the heart so that we can take action that's going to incline us to happiness. But what we see as we make this effort, of course, is that the heart is blocked. The heart is blocked by our clinging, by the various ways that we hold on that are rooted in aversion and desire. So the Buddha realized that in order to, in having this great transcendent knowledge that he came to, was that our happiness depends on the actions that we take. If we take actions out of love, we'll be happy, but we're not able to take actions out of love if the heart is blocked, if there's dukkha. So we need to let go of the cause of dukkha, the reason why the heart is blocked. We need to let go of clinging. And if we can do that, we'll be able to come to the wisdom, the love, and the compassion that's in the heart, and we'll be able to take action that leads to happiness. Of course, the fourth part of that third knowledge, the fourth noble truth, is that concentration is what enables us to be able to understand what's blocking the heart. So the concentration brings us into the body, brings us to the heart, and then enables us to see what's blocking the heart. So the more in tune with the heart we are, the more our action can be informed by the heart, including the more transcendent actions of letting go. So the heart is blocked by what we the teachings call dukkha, which is caused by our clinging. And what the Buddha realized was that our clinging manifests in four ways. There's four modalities of clinging. Our clinging manifests in action that's informed by the effort to acquire sense pleasure. So, you know, and this isn't just like ice cream and chocolate and food, you know. I mean, it's, you know, the effort that we make to acquire a pleasurable sense experience that we may grasp in terms of many different things in our lives. You know, things that we feed on, but you know, it may be our material possessions, all the different ways that we seek happiness in material things, essentially. You know, material things, sense experience, including sense pleasure, including avoiding sense pleasure. So clinging manifests in seeking after happiness in material things, possessions, different forms of comfort, security, and pleasure that come from material things. And then our clinging manifests, secondly, in our different views and opinions that we have about the world and about other beings and, of course, about ourselves. So, you know, if we want to understand our clinging, You know, these are the areas that we have to pay attention to. We have to pay attention to how we look for happiness in sense experience, our sense experience being a certain way. We have to pay attention to how we look for happiness in our views and opinions. And then the third aspect is in the different social conventions that we adhere to. So we look for happiness in these different social conventions that we belong to. We find unhappiness in not belonging to different social conventions or our aversion to certain social conventions. And then fourthly, our clinging manifests in the ways that we try to create identity through our different views about ourselves. So our different self-identity views that we try to build, or that we build. Some of them are, of course, negative views. Some of them are positive views that we try to build around ourselves. But we look for happiness in having certain views about ourselves. Or, you know, conversely, it's the same side of this other side, you know, just the flip side of the same coin. We find unhappiness in grasping on to certain negative views that we have about ourselves. So this is what our actions are comprised of when the heart is blocked. You know, this is kind of what we do when the heart is blocked. When we're clinging, this is what we do. You know, these actions are actions that are functions of desire and aversion. And, you know, the thing about actions that are functions of desire and aversion is that if it's looking for happiness in different kinds of sense experience or sense experience, material things being a certain way or certain views, they have to continually be replenished and refortified. So in and of itself, there's suffering and the heart becomes blocked by clinging in this way and by taking action that's an expression of these modalities. But that's a process that has to keep being reinforced again and again and again. So sort of this ongoing construction that we're engaged in this life. So this is what it's like when we're afflicted, when the heart is afflicted. This is what it's like when there's dukkha, the unawakened heart, This is non-happiness. This is what non-happiness is. And it's unceasing, right? It's unceasing. This is samsara. It's unceasing. Because we always have to be replenishing our different pleasures and our material circumstances, and our views have to be expounded on again and again. And our participation in social conventions has to be refortified again and again, and we have to keep constructing self-narratives and self-views. So the awakened heart is less motivated by acquiring sense experience, and it's less motivated by views and adhering to social conditions and holding on to certain self-images, self-identity. So in the awakened heart, action is less motivated by clinging, by desire and aversion. It's less motivated by fear, So, when our actions are motivated by wanting to acquire sense experience or wanting our sense experience to being a certain way, and then when our actions are motivated by our views and opinions and our adhering to social conditions and our sense views, self-identity views, our actions invariably will be informed by fear, So if it's around the different pleasures of the world or the different sense experience that we seek to have, there's always going to be fear of not having enough, right? You can never have enough. The Buddha said, even if it rained gold coins, we wouldn't have enough of sense pleasures. You know, you can never have enough. You know, there's fear about not getting more. And there's fear, of course, about losing what we have. About losing what we have. If we're basing our happiness on the acquisition and our sense experience and our sense experience in our material world being a certain way. When our actions are motivated by our views and opinions or an expression of our views and opinions, there's always going to be fear of other people's views. You know? Fear that our views will be disregarded or discounted. It's just the nature of clinging. The nature of clinging, because the things that we're clinging to can't be clung to. You know? So there's invariably going to be fear. If our happiness is found, or we're looking for happiness in social conventions, there's always going to be fear of those social conventions not being there, fear of not belonging, fear of being rejected. I think we can all identify with these things. If our happiness is dependent on having a certain self-image, there's always going to be fear about what other people think about us. There's always going to be fear of people not liking us or fear of losing status. It just goes with the territory. It just goes with the territory. You know? Sort of like no getting around fear. You know, this is kind of one of my little pet peeves. This comes under the large category of pet peeves. You know, we tend to think that you know, I can have a life based on the acquisition of having certain material things, or I can, have a life that's, driven by my participation in certain social conventions, or, or any of these categories, and that my job is just to let go of the fear, right? Let go of the fear, but you can't. You know, it's like you can't let go of the fear. The fear is going to come with it. The fear is going to come with it. Our task is to let go of our preoccupation with sense experience and views and opinions and social conventions and self-identity view. In an uncertain world, in an existence that's uncertain and subject to sickness, aging, and death, you know, we generally feel threatened. You know, we generally feel threatened, and we're looking for stability. You know, we're looking for stability and certainty. You know, and what we look for stability and certainty in a mooring place in this world in is, you know, sense pleasures, material things, our views and opinions, our participation in social conventions, and having a certain self-image. We look for stability in those things. Those things, you know, we all do it. You know, we all look for stability in those things as a way of finding a mooring place in a world that's inherently uncertain. And, we look for stability in these things, but they're entirely unreliable. They're entirely unreliable. It's like a house of cards. It's a house of cards. They're unreliable structures. The Buddha speaks to this in the Dhammapada, where he says, a city made of bones. I mean, he's talking about the body, but it's really like all conditioned things, right? When we look for happiness in conditioned things, this is what it's like. A city made of bones, plastered over with flesh and blood, whose hidden treasures, I think he's being a little facetious here, are pride and contempt, aging and death. Even royal chariots, well embellished, get run down. So even that Ferrari you got parked in your garage, I got news for you. Yeah. Even royal chariots, well embellished, get run down, and so does the body, succumb to old age. But the Dhamma of the good doesn't succumb to old age. The good let the civilized know. The unlistening man matures like an ox. His muscles develop, his discernment not. Through the round of many births, this is the round of births, we keep trying to refortifying our self-image and get our material world to be the way that we want it to be. Through the round of many births, I roamed without reward, without rest, seeking the house builder. Painful is birth again and again. House builder, you're seen. You will not build a house again. All your rafters broken, the ridgepole dismantled, immersed in dismantling, the mind has attained to the end of craving. So living in fear is unavoidable when we're driven by aversion and desire, when our actions are expressions of these four modalities of clinging. When the heart is unawakened, fear is unavoidable. So in our practice, we're moving beyond fear. We're moving beyond fear. When the heart awakens, we're able to move beyond fear. Love moves us beyond fear. So we seek to replace our preoccupation with these ways of living with love. Love moves us beyond fear, fear about who we are, what our lives are like, what they're going to be like. Now that fear is transcended by love. It's transcended by self-love. It's transcended by self-love. When self-love is cultivated, we're able to transcend fear. So this practice is a journey to the heart. It's a journey to self-love. It's a journey to self-love. This is a process, you know, this is a process. I mean, I see it in my own practice, you know, a process of very gradually over time, very slowly coming to the heart and coming to self-love. But I see this so much over, you know, the decades of practice. I think I said on Sunday morning last week, a little slip of the tongue, and I said over the centuries of practice. You know. But over the decades of practice, I've seen it's, you know, it's really been a journey, little by slowly, to self-love. To self-love. You know, so much of my life has been, you know, my action has been informed by fear. By aversion and desire, by clinging, you know, by looking for, you know, redemption or, validation in, you know, or happiness, you know, happiness in, you know, material structures, you know, self-opinion, you know, or if it's wanting other people to like me, or different social conventions. So little by slowly, you know, we see as we come to more to the heart, you know, a shifting away from those ways of clinging and more coming to the heart and self-love. And a lot of the practice, of course, is about bringing awareness to how we're looking for happiness in these by living out our lives by in these four ways in terms of our material structures and our views and opinions and so forth. What gets us beyond this ultimately is self-love. Is self-love. And that's kind of the point that I really want to make in this talk today, and what I want to emphasize. Because I think it's a concept that it's really, really deep and really hard to understand. The Buddha gave that teaching, about the acrobats, where his teaching too, the two acrobats, the father and the daughter, who were an acrobat, a team of acrobats, and the father balanced a pole on his head and his daughter sat on top of the pole. I always say it was like the old Ed Sullivan show. You know, they used to have a lot of acts like that. And the father said to the daughter, you know, you look after me and I'll look after you and we'll be fine. And the daughter said, no, you look after yourself and I'll look after myself and we'll be fine. And so they went to the Buddha and said, who's right? And he said, well, she's really right. You know, before you can help others, you have to be able to help yourself. You know? So I think this is, you know, this is a teaching that we've heard from the Buddha. We've heard it other places. You know, it always seemed right to me, but I think, you know, my understanding of that teaching has had to develop and is still in a process of developing. It's actually a very deep teaching. You know, it reminds me of teachings that the Buddha would often give, and he'd give a teaching and Ananda would say, ah, I got it, I got it, I completely got it, no problem. And the Buddha would say, don't say that, Ananda. Sort of Ananda's biography should be, don't say that, Ananda, you know? The Buddha would say, don't say that, this is much more complex than you realize. This is much more complex than you realize. So this practice of coming to self-love really asks of us a growing and deepening understanding, a growing and deepening understanding. And I think I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, I think, you know, when we hear this teaching, you know, it sounds like a greeting card. Before you can help others, you have to help yourself. You have to learn to love yourself. It's kind of like a greeting card teaching, you know. And it has a greeting card level to it, but it also has a much deeper level. You know, I think sort of that greeting, you know, nothing against greeting cards, you know, like sort of that greeting card level of it is sort of like takes shape sometimes in that, you know, love yourself, make yourself a beautiful cup of tea, you know, sit down, you know, and have a beautiful cup of tea. That's all great. I've got nothing against tea, making a beautiful cup of tea, but we're talking about a much deeper teaching. We're talking about a much deeper teaching, you know, and an understanding that really develops through clear seeing, through knowing for yourself what it means to act out of self-love. You know, it's an understanding that you develop through clear seeing, and ultimately it's an understanding that we develop in the heart. So I think one place to really begin, you know, or to deepen our journey in this developing this understanding is, you know, just to kind of be able to live in the question, what is self-love? What would it mean to take action in my life that's informed by love for myself? You know, it's like I ask myself this question, and it's sort of like, I got no answer. I got no answer, you know? It's like the mind has no answer to that, right? It's very hard for the mind. It's like you ask yourself that question. It's like, make a cup of tea? Maybe I'll make a cup of tea. You know, it's about as good as the mind can do, usually, you know? You know, I mean, the heart understands. The heart understands. That understanding, that discernment we develop over time by paying attention to our experience and the way that we're living, you know, and seeing how we're living in a way that isn't an expression of love for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an expression. You know, we think attaining all these material objectives is love for ourselves, but we start to see, well, maybe that isn't. You know, we think, you know, our views and opinions about the world are, you know, loving expressions. We start to see that they're not. You know, we start to see how our participation in various social conventions is an act of love. I love baseball, you know? I love the Mets, you know? This is going, we're going deeper. We're going deeper. So, you know, we just keep asking the question, you know? The mind can't really understand it, you know? We understand what it would mean, what it means to act out of self-love by asking the question, paying attention to our experience, and asking whether what we're doing is an expression of love for ourselves, and starting to explore through asking that question, what would it mean to take action that's in support of love for myself. So letting the questions be there and letting the heart guide us. So understanding includes seeing how actions are not an expression of self-love, seeing how our actions are not an expression of self-love, and understanding includes what self-love is. You know, this is discernment. what actions comprise self-love. So it's part of our exploration. This talk is really about, making this exploration. You know, it's not necessarily about answers, but it's an invitation to love yourself and take action that in your life that's informed by self-love. And of course, what the story of the acrobats teaches us and is telling us, and what the Buddha is asking us to understand, if the heart is unawakened, in other words, if there isn't love for ourselves, we're of limited use to others. You know, if there's not love for ourselves, if there's dukkha, if we're cut off from the love from ourselves, that means the heart is cut off, that means the heart is blocked, there's dukkha, there's not much love for others either. You know? So if there's not love for ourselves, if we're acting in ways that are informed by clinging, if we're acting out in those four ways, it's really acting out in those four ways, the heart is blocked off, and we're not going to be of much use to others in this world. It's hard for us to be generous and loving and compassionate to others. If the heart is open, if it's open to ourselves, if there's self-love, then we can be of benefit to others. So we have to see this. So gradually in our practice, we move closer to the heart. A day like today, we move closer to the heart. Gradually, we move closer to self-love. And I think this is an important way to think about, our objectives. We say, well, the objective is the heart. What does that mean? Well, it means love. Well, what does that mean? It means taking action that's informed by love. Well, what does that mean? It means taking action that's informed by self-love. Because I think we tend to go right to, loving somebody else, loving whatever, being generous, all those things that are good. But our inclination isn't towards what does it mean to take action that's informed by self-love. So gradually, as we come closer to the heart, it's like one of the things about coming closer to the heart is it's like you don't really have a choice, It's like eventually it's sort of like you see what's true. It's like if you really want to start coming close to the heart, that's why people don't want to come on meditation retreats like this. Because you might start to see how that your life isn't an expression of self-love. And then you might have to really start to change and do things that are more informed by the heart and by love for yourself. So it's very courageous to come here today and to do what we're doing in our practice. So, it's a great responsibility, that the heart gives to us to live our lives truthfully in accord with what it means to love ourselves. So, gradually, our actions become an expression of self-love. This is the fruition of the path, I think. This is really the fruition of the path, as gradually our actions become an expression, more and more so, of self-love. So this is sort of a barometer, I'm giving you a barometer for your practice and moving forward and moving towards happiness, moving towards happiness. So our actions in terms of how we live and what we do, more and more we're taking actions that support our wish to be happy, our wish to be happy of heart. More and more we relate to ourselves with love, with metta, with joy. More and more we let go. We let go. Because ultimately we let go out of love for ourselves. We let go of clinging. We let go of seeking happiness by acting out in those four ways, right? Seeking happiness in sense experience and sense pleasure, seeking happiness in views and opinions, there's really nothing wrong with most of those things, but if you're looking for happiness in those things, that's the problem, So more and more we let go of clinging as it manifests in those four ways. We let go of clinging of our self-views and the need to maintain a certain self-view. And, the other side of that coin, We let go of negative self-view out of self-love. Out of love for ourselves, we let go of negative self-view. You know, we all want, I think, to let go of negative self-view, right? We all want to let go of negative self-view. So our practice includes discerning what it is that we need to do that's going to be, constitute action informed by self-love, and then it means taking that action. Taking that action. You know? Now, the beauty of the heart is the heart in its innate wisdom, the innate wisdom in the heart shows us what it is that we need to do that's going to be informed by self-love. And also the heart includes that quality of metta, which is our greatest strength. So there's great strength in the heart. As we move closer to the heart, we develop in our inner strength, which is the strength to love. You know, love is our source of greatest, it's our greatest source of strength. And love, as the Buddha said, is what's going to transcend fear. So the more we come into the heart, the more we understand what comprises self-love, and the more we have the strength to take that action. Yeah, because taking action in support of self-love is like, it requires a lot of strength. You know, it really requires strength. It's not easy to do, you know, but we have the strength to do that. You know, the strength that we have to do that is in the heart. We find this strength in the heart. It's the only place we find it. It's the only place we find it. We all have it. It's our greatest strength. That's something that, again, you have to really start to see. And then you start to trust in that strength in the heart. Another thing, and I'll end with this, that motivates our efforts to, so the first thing that motivates our efforts is to see that what we're doing and the way that we're living and our actions informed by those four modalities, you know, is not leading us to happiness, it's leading us to unhappiness, you know. And we begin to, you know, as we move closer to the heart, we begin to ask what's in support of self-love. And what motivates us to continue forward in this way is, you know, the understanding that the time we have to do this is short. The time we have to do this is short. You know, well, let me get through all the stuff I have to do in my life in terms of all the different sense experiences and all the possessions that I want to maintain and, you know, all my involvement with views and opinions and all the social conventions and all the ways that I'm trying to, and then, if I have a little bit of time left, I'll think about maybe loving myself and taking actions that's an expression of self-love. Well, time is running short. Time is running short. You know? So that's a good reflection for us to develop. You know, we put off love. You know, we put off the most important thing there is. Now, this is something I think about a lot, you know, and it's a good thing to think about. You know? Time is short. Time is short. The time that we have to love ourselves, to act with self-love. You know, we've all struggled and suffered in this life. You know, we've all taken many actions that weren't informed by self-love. We've all taken a lot of actions that haven't been informed by self-love. We've related to ourselves for so long in a way, you know, that's been in many ways just the opposite of loving toward ourselves. So this is good to see this, you know, when we see how much we've burdened ourselves, you know, this is a motivation to put down those burdens. The Buddha said, when you see, you know, the extent of your suffering, you know, you may start to think, well, maybe it isn't, maybe it's time to end my suffering. You know, you're ending your suffering is something that you can do. You can do. This talk today is an invitation to end your suffering. To end your suffering. So isn't it time to do just that, to put down our burdens and to develop the heart, continue to develop in self-love while there is time. While there is time. You know, this love in the heart for ourselves is what enables us to live happily in this life. You know, this is what it means, you know, when we say, may I be happy, you know, to act with self-love. This love in the heart for ourselves is what enables us to live happily. This is what it means to know the happiness of heart, the greatest happiness there is.